Your Honor, we'll call for our next witness, Lander Bussey. Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Could you please state your name for the record?
Yes, Lander Bussey.
How old are you, Lander?
I'm 18.
How old were you when this lawsuit was first filed?
I was 15 years old.
Have you ever testified in court before?
Never.
This is your first time testifying in court, but this is not your first time being involved in a lawsuit like this. Is that correct?
No, I was involved in an earlier version of this case in 2011, which my brother and I, Badge, were plaintiffs as well, in which, as I understand it, the Supreme Court instructed our team to come back in a few years with the necessary evidence and resources we need to prove our claims. And dare I say, I think we've done that. So,
and to be clear, that is referred to as the case of Barhue et al. Versus State of Montana?
It is, yes.
How old were you when you were involved in that case?
I was 6 years old.
Lander, let's start with some general questions about your background. Where do you live?
I live in Kalispell, Montana. I've lived there my whole life. I was born and raised.
What family members do you live with?
I live with my mom, my dad, my brother, and our three dogs.
What can you tell me about that photo?
This is a picture of my brother and I hunting a big arm on Flathead Lake down there. We're hunting for a Hungarian partridge. Those are two dogs, two of them. Aldo and Teddy after Teddy Roosevelt, Aldo after Aldo Leupold. Not a great day on the plains.
And just to be clear, do you live with your family members in Kalispell?
Yes, I do.
Including who?
Including my brother, my mom, my dad, and my dogs.
And do you, other than your human family, do you have a special hunting buddy?
Well, yeah, in particular, Ted right here, who's having, looks like, quite the time of his life in the bottom left, just taking it all in, I remember getting him when I was really young. I was surprised by my dad, my mom and my dad on a plane right back from seeing my extended family, about nine or 10 years ago, that I'd be getting, my own Brittany puppy. And I remember traveling to Idaho with my dad, and seeing Ted for the first time and riding back in the truck with him on my lap. He was only probably that big or so at the time, but, I love that dog.
Have you spent a lot of time with him out in the field?
Oh yeah, Ted and I've been through thick and thin, and he's seen a lot, so have I, and he's definitely my hunting buddy.
You said you live in Kalispell. Did you attend school there?
All my schooling there. I went through elementary school at Edgerton and Peterson. My family moved around town a little bit, and then I went to Kalispell Middle School, and then since then I just graduated, as you can see, from Flathead High School about 2.5 weeks ago.
Who's in that photo?
This is my family, my dad, my brother, and my mom.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Good riddance.
Are you sure there's a diploma in that?
Yeah. My mom might give you a mixed answer on whether it's in there or not, but it definitely is. I checked a couple times. So.
Could you give us an overview of the activities and various things that you engaged in during your high school career? Just give us an overview, and then we'll kind of work our way.
Sure. I played hockey for 8.5 years. I served on student council for 3 out of 4 years. I've been really involved in community theater as well as local theater. That's what comes to mind.
And would it be fair to say that theater and music is also a really important part of your life?
Yeah, music in particular has played a pretty big part of my life just since I could first remember. I remember plunking on the keyboard when I was super young, melodies that I heard in movies and whatnot, and it's been a pretty big part of my life for as long as I can remember.
And when did you first begin performing in musical theater and whatnot?
I guess my earliest memories of performing would be in like early piano recitals, when I was 7 and 8, learning just the basic skills of becoming a musician. And then, after I stopped taking lessons, I, I started doing community theater and also through my middle school as well that was able to offer it, but was really able to create a really healthy network of great people who encouraged and pushed me along the way. So yeah, I couldn't be more grateful.
And to your recollection, what age were you when you first began performances?
First performances, I'd say probably around 8 or 9 years old.
And how many theater performances have you participated in since that time?
I'd say theater and like music performances, I want to say about 22, 23, I think, yeah.
Could you just give us a brief summary of your thus far theatrical performance and musical performance career?
Yeah, so this is when I was in, this is my first big show I ever did. This is Peter Pan. Really took the helm on my role as unnamed pirate, God knows what number. That really spurred a really long-lasting relationship between me and just performing in general. I've loved it my whole life. So this is me with my first lead role I ever got in sixth grade in Xanadu as Sonny Malone, the artist. And that was the first time I was ever really given a chance to work on my own. Although you might think that I'm the one in the top left, I'm actually on my knees in the bottom right hand corner. At the time I was seventh grade, that was my first high school production I ever got to do. Got to meet a lot of people who are still very involved in my life today, who I look up to, very dearly.
And you've grown up a lot since then.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Like I said, I'm on my knees in that picture. I'm actually taller than about everyone there. This was my first show that I did coming out of COVID. Godspell, a terrific show, that we did in a round outside, which for those of you who don't know, a round is a stage that is completely surrounded by audience members, which often doesn't leave a whole lot of room for breaks or for, offstage comments or anything like that. So, we did the whole show. It's about two hours long, 2.5. And, the whole thing is done, just all together. So it was a really,
it looks like you're outside. What were the special challenges that performance entailed?
Well, particularly this summer, and in the later performances, this show happens in beginning of spring about, and we started dealing with, pretty bad smoke towards the end of these shows when we were doing them, which obviously when you're doing a musical makes it exponentially harder for anyone who's primary tool in this element is their voice. Not to mention all the choreography and, all the set things we have to do around, we're outside for that long, working for that long. It becomes a pretty big toll on what we're doing.
What are we looking at here?
This was my last role with Alpine Theater Project. My last high school production, Les Miserables, my favorite musical, and only one you'll ever catch me like genuinely geeking out about. I was Jean Valjean, my dream role, and I got to do it with a cast and crew of just terrific people. I couldn't be more grateful for that experience.
You mentioned, I'm going to move on from your 23 theater performances, but, I'm sure we could spend the rest of the afternoon, but we won't. So in terms of your student council, you mentioned that you were vice president of your recently graduated senior class and other involvement.
Yes.
There.
I was vice president of my senior class. These are elections through the school. So obviously the people, the kids decide those. I didn't serve my freshman year, but yeah, sophomore through senior, I was on student council.
And I understand that you were also involved in what I've heard referred to as the International Baccalaureate Program. What is that?
Yeah, so the IB program is kind of mixed in with schools around the U.S. and countries just in general. It's an international program that kind of it stands as a rigorous core program, kind of comparable to AP courses, in which students can either choose to not participate, do full IB, which is intense rigorous core, or just choose the classes that they prefer that they want to study more rigorously. And I studied history, 20th century issues, IB history course, and English language and literature for an IB course as well.
And Did you participate in your school's choir? And if so, could you describe some of the experiences there?
Yeah, I was in choir all 4 years. Through COVID, that was quite the conundrum. We sang with masks for 2 years. Most of our sections didn't get to participate with one another. All state and festival experiences were completely cut. But during that time, I became tenor section leader. I was appointed twice out of the four sections of the choir. I also was given a leadership award 2 years in a row, a choir leadership award, as well as serving on the choir council, which is elected by about 40 members of our top choir. And then you serve to help make decisions for the choir.
Were you also denominated as an all-state selection from all the four corners of Montana?
Yeah, so Allstate is a big festival. Any school, people can audition and participate, and if you make it in, you'll be one of about 100, 120 students from different schools around the state who are considered large in part some of the top singers in the state. And so I got into that my junior and senior year and participated. So
I can't imagine you had time for anything else, but... What are we looking at there?
This is a really special memory. I've been playing hockey, or had been playing hockey for about 8.5 years or so. And this picture was taken in March of 2020, about the 13th or 14th to be exact, which is, for those of you who know, is a little relevant. And, we were one of the last sporting events to happen, tournaments in the nation, as things just kept getting checked off and pushed aside. Our tournament was in Glasgow, so not a whole lot of exposure coming in and out of there. But we went and we played hard, and we won our first championship in that league's history, or in our team's history. And it was a feeling like no other. We came. But to come back right after coming off of a championship just 2 days later and to go into quarantine for 2 weeks was quite the experience as well. So
where are you in that photo?
I'm the disgruntled fellow in the middle, holding what you could assume to be a W, but, got a little lost in the sauce there. So who knows? Yeah, that's my whole team. I was assistant captain for this team this year. I love
me. To confirm, were you state champions?
Yes, we were.
Okay. Were you able to continue, with your hockey career?
No.
What happened?
In June of 2020, I had a spiral fracture, a tib fib compound fracture in my leg while I was playing. It was a result of twisting my leg and a chink in the ice. And I was in a cast from my foot to my hip for about 2.5 months. And then came back later, did all the physical therapy, fully recovered, went through two casts, a splint, and a brace. And, December 28th, I rebroke it, skiing that year, and, was put back in a cast. And, I broke it skiing the second time and didn't play hockey. So then the next year after that, I was just too far behind my friends competitively. And it was kind of hard to get back on the ice, just mentally for me after going through that. So, but I'm still a huge fan of the sport. Even though those Golden Knights suckers,
Do you have college plans?
I'm attending the University of Denver in the fall. I'll be studying vocal performance at the School of Music.
And have you received any scholarships to attend the Lamont School of Music?
I received a scholarship from the School of Music in particular that helps pay for my tuition, my housing, a lot of stuff for me, so.
Was it quite a selection process to get into the vocal performance program?
It's particularly difficult as someone who's studying an instrument in rural Montana that you don't really know how you're pitted up against other people. So to have that full experience of the college audition and admission process and be given a chance by people who apparently see something in me is just super I just couldn't be more grateful for that.
All right. Now we're going to kind of get into the juice. Knowing your family, I can't imagine that you're much of a home buddy when it comes to hunting and fishing and getting out on the Montana landscape. Do you also then enjoy those activities?
Yes, to say the least.
Oh, you like to hunt?
I do. I love hunting.
Tell us about that.
I've been hunting my whole life. Some of my earliest memories just in the Montana wilderness are with my dad and, him taking me out hunting, on my first deer hunt. Excuse me. And, particular memory I remember is, my first deer hunt I ever went on, near Big Arm and, just walking with my dad and, for deer hunt, you get up pretty early, especially in those flatter areas where the sun, comes out quite a bit earlier. So we have to get up when the sun's still down before it's crested. And as we walked over the top of the hill, the sun just bathed the whole valley, everything. You can see the deer, all the birds, the granite poking out of the hillsides, and it just really cemented in me, what I know is home and the things that I love and value so much that it's stuck with me forever. So.
Is hunting an important family activity for you?
Absolutely. It's been a part of my family for generations. At this point, my great grandfather imparted the same things onto my grandfather as my grandfather imparted my dad. And still, am being taught by my dad as well. It's matter too. So many life lessons, so many moving things that I've learned just by being in the wilderness, with my dad and getting that one-on-one experience in nature.
If you would, I'd like to, share with us about some of your hunting experiences, referring to the, slides that will be up on the screen. And unless I can trick you otherwise, you can just tell us generally where you're hunting.
Sure. Yeah. This is near Big Arm again. Kind of near Polson. We're hunting for Hungarian partridge. That's Aldo again. My dad, side by side over his shoulder. I've got my trusty 20 gauge pump with me. That got given to me by a very close family friend of ours when I was younger, after he taught me a lot of the things about upland bird hunting, which is still my go-to bird gun at this point. So
where's Teddy?
Probably on point or something. Who knows? That dog's kind of hard to keep a hold of sometimes.
What are we looking at here?
I'm not sure if this is my first, but this is one of pronghorn bucks that I've gotten. This is in Sweetgrass Hills over in eastern Montana, near Whitlash, which is where one of our dogs is named after, Whit. This is another brilliant memory I remember having with my dad. Antelope are my favorite animal to hunt. It's the hunting process for each animal is so specific and detailed. It's just such a moving process to be able to be out there in the field, especially with my dad and learning from him every time I go out there.
Hmm. What's that a photo of?
This is my first elk. I got pretty lucky on this one. Any elk hunter will tell you that this is not really an easy find, especially on my first day, let alone my first hunt.
Can you tell us about that first day?
Yeah. So first day I remember driving into a cabin. This hunt took place somewhere near Bozeman, Montana. And we had a cabin at the base of a couple mountains that we were going to hike up. So when we got our packs all together, we started hiking up the ridges, in the late afternoon, scoping out where we thought elk might be or might come out. And just taking general notes about what we'd want to do. Elk hunting is a lot of sitting. And I don't like sitting. So there's also a lot of whittling, a lot of waiting. But, when we first saw the elk that I ended up plucking this bull from, we I remembered hearing the bugles for the first time as we were sitting on this ridgeline, and we didn't see the elk. We only heard them, and sitting ridge to ridge, or about 350, 400 yards, from the other side. And as we listened, we just slowly watched, about three bulls and, probably 10, 15 cows just come walking out right onto the top of that ridgeline. And it's, especially being my first hunt, it was just a religious experience for me, just to get to watch that firsthand, completely, ignoring the fact that we were there, not knowing that we were there, and just getting to watch them in their natural habitat. And, after a while of taking some pictures of just being there, I loaded up my 280, picked out a bull with my dad, took my breath, and dropped one of the bulls, one shot. And, yeah, then my dad ended up getting another bull as well, but incredible experience.
Hmm. What happens, after dropping the bulls, then what?
That's just, as I like to say, the kill is the smallest part of the hunting process. So much goes into where you are. The little things that you're doing, what you smell like sometimes, is important. So, after just getting that kill, especially with an elk, thank goodness we had another body there to help us carry it out, because, the process of quartering, and skinning the animal, getting everything that we'll use off of it, which is, something that I live by. If I'm going to hunt and kill something, I better be putting it to good use, whether that's eating it or using it in some way. So yeah, we take as much meat off the animal as we can, and that trophy set of horns to set up on the wall. So, yeah, again, wonderful experience.
Is it fair to say that your family food?
Yes, that's our primary source, not just protein, but food in general for the most part. Two meat freezers, in the garage are usually a pretty good sign of how well we're doing, just to get a little check out there once in a while. But, from deer and antelope and elk to, grouse and partridge, pretty much year round, we rely upon the meat, that we hunt, and we try explicitly not to buy, anything from the supermarket in terms of meat.
Lander, have you noticed any changes to your hunting experiences in recent years that you attribute to climate change?
Absolutely. Particularly in just the last few years, the windows for getting into particularly bigger game like deer and elk, come on pretty quick in the fall, and they come at a time, as all Montanans will know, at the really the crux of what we now know as smoke season. A lot of Montanans I know call it the fifth season of the year, as fire seasons. So we, coming out of late August, in the last 5 years, just the torrential smoke that's everywhere at that point has made it really hard to get out. It's a huge drain on your lungs when you're out there hiking all day. Yeah, just the general, consensus by most people is to not maybe spend 7 or 8 miles hiking uphill when it's smoky like that out. So, yeah.
What about in terms of those kinds of impacts? That have you noticed any in terms of the upland bird hunting that you do?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, as someone who spends a lot of time out in the field and is able to watch the patterns and identify how these birds act and the animals and just the mammals as well. We have to do, like I said, a lot of coordinated planning on where we're going to hunt, and what we're going to do. And in recent years, it's been much harder, because particularly bird, populations and groups of them are so scarce and few and far between. It's pretty hard to ever put a finger down on where, they could be, given that coming out of the rough winters for them, usually their populations have taken a pretty big hit by that point, and especially given how dry it gets, their food sources are definitely a target of climate change.
Could you summarize for us then how your ability to go hunting has been impacted by wildfire smoke?
Yeah, I talked about earlier, it's aside from being just a huge strain on your lungs, it's a pretty big mental burden out there, especially when a lot of what you're doing in hunting is looking for miles and gazing across giant mountain crevasses and huge prairies and not being able to see the animals, first of all, but also just knowing that you're having to deal with that environment as well as the animals are, for months on end at this point, can be pretty hard to think about and pretty hard to endure as well.
I'd like to shift attention, if I could, from hunting to fishing. Have you been fishing for quite a long part period of your life?
Yeah, I've been fishing my whole life. Yeah.
What are we looking at there?
This is my brother and I on one of our annual trips to the Blackfoot. That's us. We just got a pretty big cutty, it looks like, and pretty big proportionally to me, I guess, at that time. So, yeah.
Do you have favorite fishing spots?
I don't know if I can tell you about all those, but I definitely have a few that are my go-tos for sure.
Okay. How often would you estimate that you go fishing during the course of the year?
In terms of trips, just like I said, so much of these things are planned in advance, months in advance, and we end up building a lot of our summer and just general yearly experiences around said fishing trips and hunting trips. I probably take with my family at least 15 to 20 trips in the summer alone, whether that be just going out fishing with my dad on any given afternoon or a longer planned out days-long float trip.
And those might be all around Montana.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've been lucky enough to float and fish everywhere, and I wouldn't be able to do it if it weren't for her. Yeah, what a picture.
You could take us on a little tour around some of your favorite fishing spots. What's that?
This is Vegetu Medicine, my brother's namesake. For good reason, as you can probably see. This is one of the, one of our more treasured spots.
What's that in your left hand?
That's my fly rod.
What are you getting ready to do?
I'm getting ready to put it right smack dab in the middle of that blue water down there.
Where are we at here?
Yes, this is Smith.
Mm-hmm. And, can you tell us about that photo?
So this is a trip my family took. I think I want to say 2015, 2016, somewhere in there. And as it was talked about earlier by another plaintiff, the Smith is special given that it's a special access permit river that is pretty well sought after by a lot of people because of its beauty, clearly, but also because of its amazing fishing access and what it has to offer. It's pretty special. That was a very special trip.
What other rivers do you and your family enjoy fishing on?
It'd be quicker to name the ones that I don't, but the Missouri, all forks of the Flathead, the Blackfoot, I can think of Firehole, the Yellowstone. Those are some of the main ones that come to mind.
What are we looking at there?
This is me at the Landers Fork of the Blackfoot River, not too far from here, actually, where I've taken a picture on our annual trip since I was, I think, about, I want to say, second or third grade in that picture. I guess the sign must have been drilled deeper into the ground since I kept going back to it, because it seems like it's gotten a little bit shorter, but yeah.
And is that a special place to you?
It's a very special place for me. Particularly just the Blackfoot near there. It's a place where I had countless memories with my family of fishing, and bonding with my family.
Leonard, have you seen any changes to the rivers that you fish that you attribute to climate change?
Absolutely. And, in more recent years, as many of the experts have attested to, the water levels have become increasingly sporadic, and especially in the spring when the runoff is more torrential and picks up a lot more. And as we see higher temperatures earlier in the spring, which are more abnormal nowadays for us, The runoff into these rivers makes the fishing patterns more sporadic. It makes the water murky. It makes the habitat for the fish very difficult to navigate, both for us and the fish. That's one of the main things we have to deal with.
And as the summer moves on, have you witnessed lower stream flows than a number of years ago?
Yeah, Montana's been dealing with this for a while at this point, particularly the places that I go to, it seems like. Later into the summer, like I mentioned, it ends up getting pretty hot and stays hot for a while. And so late into August here, what I've seen in the last 5 years, is just these places that I love, particularly like even the Blackfoot, the Milk River, places that I've grown up on, are much less accessible. Whether that be for fishing access or just general recreational use of the river, it's been much more difficult.
What about wildfire smoke and its impact on your ability to enjoy fishing?
Yeah, so much like hunting, fishing can often be a little bit of a strenuous process as well. And when you're taking pretty long float trips and but also hiking trips down and up river, smoke can take a pretty big toll on your mental health and how you're viewing how you're taking in the experience, but also your physical health and how you're trekking across the terrain. So it's been a pretty big part of our trips the last few years.
What are we looking at in this photo?
This is a picture of my family on another one and some family friends and Ted pointing out the fish too at the front of the boat, but on our annual Lower Flathead trip, Lower Flathead is very special to us as well. Given the warmth of the water coming into late August, the Lower Flathead is the top water off of Flathead Lake. So into those later months, it's practically like bath water getting in there. As you can see here, we got quite a little rain on our parade, and the smoke that's poured into the valley. It's consistent with trips that I've taken there for the last 5 years or so. It's become pretty much a planned occurrence that we'll deal with smoke on that trip, no matter how we try to plan it. It's pretty mandatory that we take that trip later in the year as like a finality to our summer because of how much fun we have. But we've pretty much had to plan on smoke being a factor in that trip for the last 5 years or so.
Thank you. You've mentioned wildfires and its impacts on hunting and fishing around all over the state of Montana. In terms of closer to home, what has been your experience with wildfires near to home?
So obviously besides the obvious of smoke in the Flathead Valley and how it ends up flooding the valley, especially later in the summer. A couple years ago, I want to say about 2018, near where we live on near Foyce Lake, we heard news about a fire that was pouring over the top of the hill that we live on, later in the evening. And at first we thought it was just a brush fire that could have been put out pretty easily. But, as we kept hearing more, we heard from our neighbors that it was making its way, towards a neighborhood that we live, on the hill. And my brother, my mom, and I decided to drive out just to get a look back up. You can drive down the road and look back up at the hill in the neighborhood, and you can see the flames starting to creep over the top of the hill, along with all the smoke billowing up. And on top of that, the flames illuminated up into the sky to kind of give this eerie orange hue over my home. And from that point on, it was pretty uncertain about what we were going to do.
Did you prepare to evacuate?
Yeah. Really surreal experience. Something that all of us hope we don't have to deal with, but seems like most of us do more nowadays. We called the fire department, asked about whether we were in an evacuation zone. They told us, it was likely so that we should pack up in the event of our house needing to be evacuation, get our closest belongings, everything that we needed, we could put into one bag. My mom often jokes about how the two things that she wanted to take, would be gone. And that being the piano in the living room and, most of our baby books, which are packed down in the storage room downstairs. I guess the sporadic dread that kind of swept through the house at that point. My dad wasn't home, but the uncertainty of not knowing what was going to happen to our home, whether we'd have to leave or not, whether we'd see anything here again, in a place that I've grown up in and loved so dearly. It was just a really weird and frantic experience for my family.
Has wildfire smoke impacted your ability to perform, not just in terms of some of these performances that we spoke of, but in terms of your performances by way of performing more or less professionally?
Yeah, so I've been lucky enough in the last couple of years to kind of start getting a little bit more professional merit under my belt. I perform gigs around town in Whitefish and Kalispell, as well. It's still through the theater company, Alpine Theater Project as well. And a lot of that stuff is dependent on the conditions in which I'm performing, and which more often than not is outside inside after a long day of hunting or fishing outside. And when I'm having to deal with the smoke 24/7, it takes a pretty big toll on my vocal capabilities, my lung capacity, how I'm able to handle myself in the environment, and just really affects my capabilities to be able to perform at a level that I need to be at. So, yeah.
How does it affect you emotionally?
Again, all of this in particular is just a really weird post-apocalyptic feeling for me. And when it lasts so long, in the later months in particular, it just fosters a really, depressing and tough environment for me and my family to really adapt to. We spend so much of our time outside, not to mention everything, whether that be recreationally or, like I said, performing. There's just a lot dependent on that outside environment, and it ends up taking a pretty big toll on just our general happiness and how we're able to be comfortable.
Lander, I understand that you suffer from allergies. Can you share with us how, if at all, the wildfire smoke affects your allergies?
Yeah, absolutely. I have pretty bad pot, tree allergies in general, as well as tree allergies. I have a cat allergy, when the smoke starts hitting in later in the summer months, the symptoms that I will have experienced back in the early spring, which are usually amplified, as a result, of these more sporadic spring conditions in which we're getting more pollen. I heard from previous experts how how that higher level of CO2 allows it to foster a higher environment of pollen just in the air. And that's, for me, that's really difficult to deal with, especially, like I said, I'm a performer, and when I'm having to be practicing 24/7 with bloodshot eyes and scratchy eyes and a runny nose and a sore throat, it takes a pretty big toll on how I'm able to adapt to those situations, as well as just be comfortable in general.
And would it be fair to say that your allergies and those symptoms that you've described have become increasingly worse in recent years?
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly in the later months, the smoke ends up, anybody who's had to deal with the smoke knows, just kind of the gross, dry feeling. I performed several shows outside in the smoke, with professionals I know, these are people who have been on Broadway, and some of the most hardline environments you can be for a professional vocalist or musical performer. And even they are having problems keeping up with the conditions, of smoke later in the year. And whether that be through things like my allergies and throat inflammation, or just general lung capacity and scratchiness and capability, it definitely takes a toll on how I'm able to execute those things.
Lander, you were here during the course of the week to hear the testimony of the scientists, including Drs. Running, Dr. Whitlick, Dr. Fagry, and Dr. Stanford?
Yes, I was.
And did you hear their testimony about the current and future climate impacts to Montana's environment?
Yeah, I did.
You did?
Yeah, I did.
How does that make you feel?
It's been a really hard week in the courtroom. I think I speak for a lot of the fellow plaintiffs when I say that, but just having what we have been having to deal with both mentally and physically for the last few years validated in the courtroom by professionals who have dedicated their whole lives and careers free of charge to us to assist us in helping the place that we love so dearly. And it's been really difficult, just to watch, how dire of a situation this is be put on full display. And equally as frustrating as that is knowing the place we're in as a state to be able to stop these problems. Mr. Erickson, I think it was yesterday, remarked on how we could be having a much different conversation in the courtroom as Montana, as a leader in stopping fossil fuel emissions and saving this environment. And I mean, thank God that it's Montana that gets here first, because I can't stand to see this place that I and so many people love and use so dearly be put to such waste at this point. Yeah, it's been really difficult, and I don't know how you can sit in this courtroom and listen to everything that is put on display here and not have a semblance of regret or even responsibility to get up and fix these things that we have been told firsthand can be fixed. So it's been really difficult, but I am optimistic, and I'm so proud of the work that our team and the plaintiffs have been able to accomplish. It just makes me very proud.
As proud as it makes you feel, Andrew, how does the fact that Montana state law requires Montana's agencies to ignore greenhouse gas emissions and climate change when conducting environmental reviews for fossil fuel permits, how does that make you feel?
I don't know how you can sit in this courtroom at all and to listen to these experts, and not just the evidence, but the pleas that they have. Dr. Stanford and Dr. Runny remarked on how they'd never seen such language in reports such as these for the direness of the situation. And the state has one job, to look out for us, for me. And I can't really believe that this much can be put on display in a court of law, and yet still we can be so vigorously shut down by a government that doesn't respect our right to the legal process. We have been almost shut down from getting into court 8 times, whether that be through the court itself or through the Supreme Court trying to get our case dismissed. The state government did not even want us to have our day in court, let alone for the facts to be presented about how detrimental this is to everyone in the state. It's just another clear example of the government putting profits before the people that it is supposed to serve. And it's so frustrating and disappointing to see it on such a wide and systematic level, as we've seen in the last few days. So I can't speak to the exact emotions of Governor Gianforte or Attorney General Knudsen towards our case, but the statements towards our case and everything that we've worked so hard for these last 3 weeks have been nothing short of disrespectful, vicious, and wrong, and completely disregarding what this state and its constitution were initially ratified for. So I'm very disappointed. But I'm still optimistic that this may be some catalyst for change.
Hmm. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
Any thoughts?
No questions, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.